Georgia was one of the Confederate states reconstructed relatively soon after the end of the Civil War in the summer of 1868. The General Assembly approves the 14th Amendment, ratifies it here in the state, and after that, the state is readmitted into the Union.
Seemingly.
Seemingly.
It is absolutely true that after Congress passed what was called the Reconstruction Acts and set up military reconstruction, and there had been a constitutional convention, and black voters had voted in 1868, and the new legislature that was in place in the summer of 1868, which included 32 African Americans out of the 200-and-something total state senators and representatives, approved the 14th Amendment, granting equal citizenship. Supposedly, Georgia was then ready to re-enter the Union, but Congress adjourned before the Georgia congressmen could actually take their seats in Washington. Meanwhile, the state legislature is meeting. So there are 32 African Americans, 29 in the House and 3 in the state Senate. And their white counterparts, by and large, say, well, just because you now have the right to vote doesn't mean you have the right to hold office. And in early September of 1868, after they had only been in office for about 2 months, the white legislators basically expelled the black legislators because of their color alone.
And this sets up a protest.
It sets up a protest. One of the legislators who was expelled was a man named Philip Joyner from Southwest Georgia, one of the pioneering black Reconstruction legislators. And he, along with some white allies, plan a march from Albany, Georgia, 25 miles south, to Camilla, Georgia, the county seat of Mitchell County in deep southwest Georgia, where they're going to have a political rally. And let's just say the atmosphere throughout 1868 is incredibly tense. You have former slaves basically being in a state of jubilation because they finally can vote, and you have whites being very concerned about Negro-dominated legislators and, you know, and very, very much concerned about rising black political mobilization as well. So you have a sort of a tinderbox atmosphere already throughout 1868. So this march is planned, and they set out from Albany. They are accompanied by a fife and drum band, and they gather other African Americans along the way, eventually a couple hundred. And as they're getting closer to Camilla, rumors are widespread, and rumors, of course, have kind of a life of their own. And the rumors are that there's hundreds of armed black men descending upon Camilla, and we are not going to have a political rally of this type in our town.
I can imagine just the thought of a bunch of freedmen with arms walking through the countryside, coming to your courthouse, would be frightening to the white population. When you consider that just a few years earlier,
they were enslaved.
And the fear gripping the slaveholding South was armed slave rebellion, and now you've got freedmen carrying guns? Yeah.
That's right. I mean, it's hard for us to kind of realize sort of the drama of Reconstruction. I mean, you have former slaves and former masters trying to make sense of a new society in the aftermath of a devastating civil war and a war-torn economy. You have big questions that I would argue are still with us today about sort of what was the place of African Americans in society? What was the place of the South in the nation? Who calls the shots? There are enormous consequential questions, and none of it is clear. And for many white Southerners, certainly their world had been turned upside down.
So this march is heading toward the courthouse in Mitchell County in Camilla.
That's right. And there are some members of the march that are carrying firearms. By and large, they only have like one round of birdshot. You know, they're not heavily armed at all. Meanwhile, there's certainly reports that repeating rifles are moving into hands of whites in Camilla. And the sheriff of the town basically establishes a posse of all white people in the town to arm themselves in response. So they get into town and they get into the courthouse square, and there are at least two crowds of whites, numbering 50 in one case and I don't know how many in the other, on both sides of the courthouse square. And there's one person who was outspoken in his opposition to black political efforts and might well have been inebriated as well, starts the whole thing by shooting directly at the fife and drum band. And chaos, bedlam, all hell breaks loose, if you will. There's widespread gunfire in this courthouse square, people spreading, fleeing like mad. And for, you know, a couple days later, the mob and groups of whites are pursuing fugitives, not only in town, but out in the outlying areas as well. And I don't know what the exact casualty figures are, but about a dozen people ultimately lay dead as a result of the massacre.
And that massacre makes the papers nationwide.
That's right.
A big event.
It's a big event nationwide. It's reported among white Southerners as a triumph. You know, we have repelled successfully black political mobilization. It's kind of seen as a story of redemption almost. In the country as a whole, it's seen more as Reconstruction is not working. And remember, after Georgia had passed the 14th Amendment and was on the verge of being readmitted, many of the federal troops had left the state. So maybe it's time to kind of reinstill military reconstruction in the state of Georgia, which is what happened, and Georgia is not admitted back into the Union for another year or two.
Plays right into the radical Republican reconstruction plan where, you know what, these states are not ready.
That's right. And it also kind of sparks a whole series of events around the elections in the fall of 1868 that are clearly marked by fraud, violence, and intimidation, and this would be a pattern that would last for a long, long, long time. And it clearly has its effect. You know, there are fewer black folks who vote. There are fewer black folks who win election. You know, clearly has this kind of effect, and it kind of ushers in, you know, what we would later call the Jim Crow era, with this sort of mass intimidation, disfranchisement, and so forth. You know, and the legacies of Reconstruction are racial polarization, or bitterness, enmity, anger against the North, and a series of myths. Camilla is certainly part of that. You know, the mythology of Camilla in the white community was that hordes of armed Negroes had descended upon the community and we needed to defend ourselves. And so there's this myth of Reconstruction that comes up, which is really at odds with the facts of what happened on this day on September 19th.
Cliff Kuhn, thank you.
Thank you, Steve.